Boom, chica, wow, wow, and welcome to TMO's Daily Observations Podcast. It's Friday, July 19th, 2019. I am Brian Chaffin. I'm standing in for Kelly Gaumont. And with me today, I am pleased as punch to have reporter and author Charlotte Henry. Welcome, Charlotte.
Hello, hello. Thank you, Editor Brian.
And of course, photographer and young man about town, Andrew Orr. Andrew, how's it going?
Hey, it's going well. I'm glad it's Friday.
Indeed, it is, in fact, Friday. Friday night for Charlotte, Friday afternoon for you, and Friday morning for me. It's funny how that works. Time, wibbly
weird.
Wobbly. Timey,
so
wimey.
Weird.
Yeah. Speaking of weird. Speaking of weird, we're going to start off with space.
Yes, because I'm very excited.
You're
about
very
the
excited
50th.
About space, yeah.
I'm really excited about space. I'm really excited that tomorrow marks the 50th anniversary of Neil Armstrong's walk on the moon, obviously with Buzz Aldrin as well. I put a video up that I shared that NASA put up, a restored video of that kind of almost 3 hour long moonwalk, 2.5 hour long moonwalk, which is just amazing to watch, even if you just watch the first few minutes of Neil Armstrong walking down the ladder, kind of jumping up and down the ladder a bit and then stepping on to the moon and saying his famous words. It's a pretty amazing thing. And it's even more amazing when you consider that the piece Andrew shared with us the other day that, what was it, Andrew? An iPhone now has how many times more power than the Apollo 11 computers?
Yeah, so you had sent me this article about Margaret Hamilton.
Yes.
And I kind of chuckled because she's standing next to this giant pile of written out code.
Yeah, so Margaret Hamilton, for people that don't know, was one of the key programmers involved, and she fixed a key issue that allowed that kept the Apollo mission and particularly the lunar module safe. And an amazing woman. So there's a picture sent Andrew that they did a nice preview of her on bio of her on Vox.com. I sent it to Andrew. There's this amazing picture.
So the Apollo guidance computer had 20,048 words of memory and 72 kilobytes of read-only memory. Now, I did a link teaser saying comparing modern iPhones to that. So most iPhones today have over 100,000 times more processing than this Apollo 11 computer. iPhones that have 4 gigabytes of RAM have over 1 million times more memory. And iPhones with 512 gigabytes of storage have over 7 million times more storage.
Well, I can throw in a little bit of additional context for that. There was a fellow who got an Apollo guidance system mining bitcoins.
Sorry, oh, what?
Well. Yeah, right. And it took 10.3 seconds per hash. Now, in comparison, you can buy a piece of equipment today that has multiple processors for sure, but it 14 terahashes per second. And that was so it'd be 14 trillion hashes per second, as opposed to 10.3 seconds for a single hash on that Apollo guidance system,
which all makes it the more extraordinary that they got to the moon, landed on the moon, and then got back safely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine sitting in that little tin can?
No. I think I did a link to on the site as well, a fabulous program that they had here on the BBC, which was called 8 days to, I think it was called 8 days to the moon and back, and it used some audio recordings from the cockpit and also actors playing Michael Collins, who, by the way, if we have a chance to talk, I think really is the hero of the whole mission. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, and there was a scene where they kind of show the night before they're about to land on the moon, and Neil Armstrong's lying in his little bunk, as you say, in a tin can, and I can't imagine what they must have been thinking. And that's what I think is so powerful about that video that NASA shared and we have on the site, that he steps out of an even smaller tin can onto a planet that no human being had ever been on before. It's
technically on a planet, just to be pedantic.
Oh, yes, good point. Yes, yeah. The moon is, well, you know, a surface, whatever we want to call it. But he stepped onto the moon where no one had ever been before on this terrain. And it's truly extraordinary.
It is truly extraordinary. And we've seen this dazzling array of archival footage, archival material, recollections, dramatizations, documentaries, photographs, videos. What was the thing that Google did? They did a solar thingy. Did you guys not see that? Google's
I didn't see that.
Apollo, Margaret. How do you spell her last name?
Hamilton, like the musical.
Or Dave.
It was, see here, I'll include.
And also I saw that you had the Saturn V rocket was beamed onto the Washington Monument.
They used 107,000 mirrors to reflect the moonlight to create a portrait bigger than Central Park of Apollo. You know, I just recently bicycled through Central Park. It's pretty big. Central Park of the Margaret Hamilton. This would be out in the desert. I will include a link to the show notes. But in the show notes to this video, actually, you know what? Let's actually just get this posted too. One of you want to? Do you still have the cool stuff found to do, Andrew?
Yes.
Great. Well, I'll send you this link and then we'll include a link to that. Anyway, this is fantastic. Okay. And it's great too, because they're reflecting moonlight.
Amazing.
With this project. So of these wonderful things have been coming to, you know, both coming to light or getting new attention on them. And it's fantastic.
And and it was all done 50 years ago, and we have more power in our pockets now.
More power in our pockets, yeah.
To put this in perspective, I have a couple of space facts that I know. So
here we go. It's Andrew's space fact time. Stand back, people.
So the moon is, I think, about 240,000 miles away from the Earth. You could actually, if you were able to, you know, move all the planets together, you could actually fit every single planet in between the Earth and the Moon with maybe about 5,000 or so miles to spare. That is the distance that they traveled, not once, but twice.
Cool.
That's very cool. We like it that.
I saw another little factoid yesterday about how the amount of plastic... the amount of plastic that we throw away on a yearly basis, if laid end to end, would go to the moon and back.
Huh.
So that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
So when I was in Japan in 2002, the Japanese train system ran not on computers but with paper and pencil, and it was like, I got an apology once when a train was like 2 minutes late or a minute late. I mean, like, you know, super duper on time, and they didn't run on computer systems. Things did happen before computers.
No, I don't believe that.
No, it's true. Things actually did happen. Like, we built skyscrapers.
No.
Check this out. The Great Pyramids were built without the use of modern computers.
That's not true. They had CAD software.
So it's amazing things can be done with computers. And I think that we've become so reliant on computers that the accomplishment factor of what humans can do becomes more magical, more unnecessarily magical than it was when we look back in hindsight. For those of us who are dependent upon them today, and those of us who mm-hmm. live in a world that is dependent upon them today.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I still think I think this idea of Margaret Hamilton standing next to Code, which was, I mean, I suspect I'm 5 foot tall and I suspect she's not much taller than me. And she's standing next to stacks of computer code that go up to her head. And it put Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong on the moon. And, yeah. You know, first of all, I do want to focus on the contribution of this amazing young woman, because I think that's worth doing, because obviously we talk a lot about the men involved in the Apollo mission. They were amazing and brave and actually went to this place. And I assume they must have thought they were going to die. They when they took off, they thought they were almost certainly not going to come back.
Yeah, I wonder about that. It takes a certain amount of hubris to be able to do that sort of thing in the first place. So right. It's actually just as conceivable. They hubris, insanely
bravery,
thought that they
potato,
would.
Potato.
Yeah, but it's also possible that they insanely thought that they could make it back. I don't
Maybe.
Know. I don't think I've ever read any. I don't think I've ever read any comments from them about that.
No,
it's interesting.
But
it's interesting.
It is interesting. And also, yeah, I did want. Like I said, I do think Michael Collins is a rather undervalued, almost, hero in all this, because he didn't have the joy and the aplomb of going of actually setting foot on the moon.
Yeah, can you imagine going all that way in that tin can,
and you don't get to step it?
Yeah,
yeah. And knowing that if something goes wrong on the surface of the moon, you're going to have to be the guy that turns around without your buddies.
I can't imagine.
He knew right. he might have to make that decision.
All right, speaking of decisions and speaking of running on paper and pencil, time to move on. See what I did there? See, I'm bringing those ACM segues straight to DDO, with apologies to Kelly and our listeners, of course. Topic number two is a completely different beast, and that's some news that's going on in Russia. Who wrote that up?
Well, Reuters really, and I did a link to it on the site. And basically, Russian lawmakers are looking into implementing a law. It's not there yet. It's going through the lower chamber at the moment, that would basically insist that all smartphone makers would have to have locally made software on smartphones, but also other devices like smart TVs. Now, obviously, Apple is quite a big player in the Russian smartphone market. And I suspect they're not going to be all that happy if legislation that allows authorities to draw up a list of mandatory locally made software is passed. At the moment, the proposal is that, you know, there would be pretty significant fines if makers did not pre-install that software.
All right, so there's a whole lot to unpack here. The first is that right. When we say lawmakers are introducing this, like this, things like this don't happen without Vladimir Putin having been involved.
Well, and ultimately, he would have to be the one he would ultimately sign it off. So you assume it doesn't get this far without them being pretty confident that would happen,
or
right?
It's being done at his direction or the direction of top lieutenants. Secondly. Secondly, this is all about the cover is that it's about promoting local software development, protecting local software development.
Lol.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about getting spyware on these devices.
That's what it felt like to me when I read the story. Yeah.
Yeah. I have zero. Yeah. I have no proof of that, but I have zero doubts about it. And, you know, that's good enough for me. Thirdly, LOL command economy, going straight back to the Soviet era, like authorities are going to put together a list of apps that have to be sideloaded onto devices. Authorities, like, this is such a throwback to 5-year plans. It's kind of crazy. I remember a Wall Street Journal interview. No, it's not true. I remember a Wall Street Journal story talking about like as the Soviet Union, this was in the aftermath of the Berlin Wall coming down. It was in the aftermath of Boris Yeltsin's rise to power, and it was a look at this. So this would have been in the early 90s, and it included an interview with a local communist party boss somewhere who held up, this is like stuck with me for so long, held up like a bottle of bottled water to the reporter and said, well, like look at this bottled water, knowing how many labels to print and how many bottles to make. That's not something that you know, the free market can decide. You need the government deciding that. And that's a pretty close quote to what he was saying. But this is insane. And the question is, what will Apple do about it?
I mean, that's what I was going to ask you guys.
And the part about they want Apple to pre-install Russian apps on their iPhones. I mean, I don't think they do that, not even in China, because that's another major country that has some human rights issues and that Apple, you know, does business in.
Yeah, authoritarian regimes like, where Apple does business.
Yeah. So I wonder if Apple would have to create a special version of iOS with these apps, or, you know, find some way to silo them, because the article says it will find companies that sell devices without pre-installed Russian software anywhere from 630 to 2,500 pounds. But I'm wondering if that's per device, because that by itself is, you know, less than pocket change for Apple.
Yeah, if it's like a quarter million pounds a year, then Apple would obviously just choose to pay that fine. If it's per device, obviously that would, you know, becomes a choice between Apple complying with local laws, like it is always done in China, when that government has done something that is quite frankly antithetical to Apple's stated values and the theoretical values of Western democracies. Apple has always capitulated. And or whether or not Apple would actually pull out of the market. And it's
a big market.
Yeah, it's a big-ish market. I mean, you know, it's a market where there's a whole bunch of people who can't afford iPhones. But it would be a complete
drag. But it's also
a
market with a whole bunch of people that can.
This is true. And those people would probably still get their iPhones from the gray market, the black market, and simply when they're abroad.
Mm.
So
the question that occurred to me as well, you know, Apple is so protective of the design and the appearance and the uniformity of its devices and software. How could it then put in X software that it hasn't designed? You know, this is
it theoretically wouldn't be an iOS. It would be apps that are sideloaded.
Right, but it just seems extraordinary to me that they would allow something that would so fundamentally alter iOS.
Alter the iPhone experience, certainly. Now, what neither of you may remember is when iPhone was introduced in 2007, it was a very, very big deal that the first carrier was Singular.
Yeah, O2 here in the UK.
And Singular ended up buying AT&T and then changing its name to AT&T. But the carrier was not allowed to sideload apps. And this was something that was part and parcel of the entire cell phone market. And Apple got a carrier who was like, you know, like one of the smaller carriers to agree to do this. And it was a very, very big deal. So for Apple to then allow a government to mandate sideloading and sideloading apps of its choosing, that would be a major affront to Apple's control over its own devices And I personally, if this happened, if this bill becomes law, I would want Apple to pull out of that market. And I say that as a tiny shareholder, profits be darned, get out of that market if this happens, because the this will be, China would probably follow suit. Authoritarian regimes all over the place would follow suit. You know, if this particular crack in the dike is allowed to exist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the most dangerous part. This would be precedent setting. So if Apple is willing to do it for one country, other countries can say, well, why not me?
Yeah, and the UK could follow suit. UK could you know who? The UK is like super quick to want to like intrude into people's devices. So the UK could follow suit. America could follow suit. Don't even start with me. Don't even start with me. You guys are always, your government is always talking about like demanding back doors and access to encryption, etc.
I certainly have highlighted some of those issues, but I don't know if they want spyware side loaded to iPhones. But they could.
So could the
U.S. government.
Yeah, the U.S. government could, and it would be just as wrong. But you guys tend to be way ahead of us when it comes to that sort of thing. Yeah, talk to me about those cameras in London. All right, so listen, the trains are pulling into the station late. And my paper and pencil says, this is not okay. So, Andrew, thanks for being here.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Charlotte, you too, even though you're cursing my name.
I'm going to speak to the Queen about you. Happy weekend.
Yeah, fair enough. This all checks out. All right, you can email us at observations@macobserver.com. Kelly will be back on Monday, thankfully. And you can also find us on Twitter at TMO Daily. This has been TMO's Daily Observations on July 19th, 2019. And then all I can say is, do as thou wilt.